and you will atone.
Oh, yeah, who's your daddy? Who's your daddy? Oh, shut up.
This is arrived, and other people have remembered, and they come back to us and they say, hey, don't worry, don't be afraid, ever, because this is just arrived.
The truth shall set you free, but first, it will piss you off. Naughty by Nature, with Nature Boy. Interesting people, with interesting ideas, for an interesting conversation. Who made who? This is a question many have asked and pondered upon for centuries. The rock band AC/DC even has an album entitled after that. Another question, though different but related, is who rules whom? Is there a single faction or group ruling the world today? Or is it a system of separate secret societies and groups acting out agendas and plans that were created thousands of years ago? And is ancient Irish history and language the key to unlocking this very question? The best way to predict the future is to know the past. And on today's podcast, we go deep, deep into the past. My guest is an anarchist, a musician, a researcher, author, political commentator, filmmaker, and is the man and voice behind Spacebusters. He has a vast understanding of history, both secular and esoteric, as well as a thorough understanding of today's current events. In addition, he has an uncanny ability to tie them all together and make sense of this crazy world we find ourselves living in today. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the show the man with a golden voice, Mr. Steve Falconer.
How you doing, Mr. Steve?
Yeah, great. Second to none, except for you. You've got you're the golden tonsils. I'm gonna have to drop my pitch just to match you today.
Well, I'm a baritone and you're a tenor. Together, boy, we could, if I could sing, honestly, we could do some killer harmonies, man. But I can't sing.
Dude, you make me sound like an alto, man.
You know, the funny thing about it, right, is that when I was young, I had an extremely high pitched voice. I sounded like a girl. And I mean, people would honestly, that didn't know the house, would call and go, oh, think they're talking to a girl, right? And then about 14, when my nuts dropped, so did my voice. And I went from that down to this. And I'm like, oh, fuck. Okay, here it is, people. I have to say, it's been my blessing, but it's also been my curse, my friend.
Best thing to happen. I had the same in fifth grade choir. I had all the lead solos. I had this high little choir boy voice.
Yeah.
The kind the Pope would drool over.
A little eunuch.
Sixth grade, my nuts dropped like yours, and then they gave me the square dance collar.
yeah. Do-si-do, round and round you
bow
go.
To your partner, bow to your choir. Yeah. Oh. Yeah, I had the really high angel voice, and then mine just dropped like two octaves, and that was the end of that.
Yeah, that was the end of that, man. That was the end of that. But us people with golden voices must stick together. Birds of a feather, my friend. Birds of a feather.
Well, you know, the ladies like it. As my friend Deb says when I've been on Patrick Henningsen's show, she's like, time to change my panties.
I've heard that. I've heard that, too. So it says I must be doing something right.
That's all right. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, anarcho-poke, I just kind of want to start off. I know all the listeners out there is like, oh, he's talking about that anarcho-poke again. Yeah, because it was that good, everybody. That's where this gentleman and I met. And I don't know about you, Steve, but for me, it was magical. It was surreal. And it literally changed something in me. I am still unpacking well, the effects that had happened on me. I mean, what was your experience there? And how many times, by the way, have you been there?
I had the same as you. That was my first time being invited to, you know, I'm not a public speaker. I mean, I'm a musician, so I perform, you know, four nights a week in front of hundreds of people, but I don't speak publicly. I'm always either on this kind of thing or making movies. Mm-hmm. So that was my first time there, my first experience public speaking. I was really nervous.
Really?
But yeah, I had the same as you. And I heard from those who had been there many times, they said there was something very special about this one. Mm. All of them, all the repeat talkers said this was a really special vibe. And I had the same as you. I just met a lot of people. Like I used to laugh at people, you know, I got to find my tribe and, you know, these people. And I felt like I did find it there actually. So yeah, it was a really special experience. One, like an amazing place too.
Yeah.
You had to be there, but they should come there if they haven't. It's great.
Yeah, it was. I mean, even after the hurricane and all the devastation that that area hit, the garden was still beautiful. Damaged, yes, but beautiful. I remember walking down all the paths and the walkways and the boardwalks, and one minute you're walking through this lush garden, and the next thing you know, you pop out in this area, and there's a swimming pool, there's a meditation area, and then you're wandering through the little paths, and there's the sweat lodge, and then you're wandering through some things, and there's the restaurant, and there's the bar. It was just, to me, it was magical, man. I definitely want to go again.
I jumped in that middle pool on the last night. I just got down to my underwear and said, "Ah, screw this. I'm jumping." I went for a late night swim. It was gorgeous. But yeah, and there was a lot of synergy. I see you've been interviewing a lot of people from there since mm-hmm. then, and I've been doing the same. There was, you know, a lot of people of different minds, different ideologies, but still the same heart and principles. We've all kind of come together and have been introducing each other to each other's fan bases and stuff. So yeah, something really special happened there, and I hope it continues.
I do too. I know Jeff's been losing money on it, but he's going to be doing 2025, so hopefully we can get people up there and we can actually make it at least break even, because my God, I've done festivals before, and I know you have, been in the music business.
Oh yeah,
it's a full year's worth of regular work to put that 7 days on, and when you're losing $50,000 for the event, right, it's really hard to justify it from Jeff's standpoint, and I can completely understand it, but it has to continue. It was that magical, man. I mean, me, you mentioned something interesting. You says, "I'm looking for my tribe." I'm like you. I'm stuck in a normie secular world, right, with esoteric non-secular ideas, and trying to fit into that. I can do it, but I don't, it's not like a perfect fit. There was a perfect fit. Me, I'm naturally introverted. Right. I'm on the Myers-Briggs test. I'm an introvert with extrovert qualities. Right. So, and usually in crowds, I feel kind of isolated and alone. There was the opposite, man. This is the weirdest thing. And it started from the first time I walked in there on Sunday night, didn't know anybody. I sat down, perfect stranger, struck up a conversation. I made a friend. I'm like, oh, this is pretty cool. Somebody else sat down. Same experience. It happened every day, 100% of the time, so much of the time that Thursday, I literally had to take a break, right? Go into my little introverted world, grab a cool margarita, and just go wander around the gardens for a few hours. Because I'm like, man, I'm getting overwhelmed. And in a good way, and not in a bad way. It's just, my God, all these people around here, I found my tribe is what I'm trying to say there. And I gapped out. I had a good thought and I gapped out. I hate it when I do that.
It was, though, even like, you know, hanging out in Max Egan's bar, the Crow House bar at nights. I met a lot of people, a lot, like everyone I talked to who wasn't a speaker there. They had a story that could have equally been a good 50-minute speech on stage. Like the people there were just as interesting as all the speakers, you know? So it's like, holy shit. Everyone you met was just cool as hell. I didn't meet one bummer person there the whole time. So yeah, it was great. And that's what those events are for, is people like yourself and myself and others like us. We don't fit into society anymore. We decided that we don't want to do what society is doing. And the reason you're introverted is because everyone you talk to is a bore or a bummer or judgmental, you know, they think you're a crazy and a nutcase and a quack.
Oh yeah, I've heard all those.
You come to a place like this where everyone you meet is just like you. Mm-hmm. And they're doing amazing shit. It's not like, you know, the Lieberland guys. I met a guy who started his own bank and who started his own country. And everyone, you know, Matt Prestes, the head of the Walter Russell Foundation, like everyone you talk to is just like, oh my God. These people are movers and shakers and doers. I hung out with you a lot in the podcast lounge. We got you on with Pat, my friend Pat and Max Egan, which is great.
That was surreal, dude. That was surreal. You know,
highlight for you, right? It's hanging out with Max and Pat. So there was just magic shit happening nonstop 24/7 there.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, when I went on with Max, that was surreal because I remember sitting there and I had the slot before Max on Patrick's. Well, I mean, just getting invited onto Patrick's podcast was pretty like, whoa, shoot, surreal. Then I remember, and this is just a memory of my poor brain that will never, ever leave. He's bringing Max up and Pat looked at me and says, do you want to go on with Max? And I'm like, huh? Process. Oh, yeah. Yes. As Charlie says, Charlie Robinson for other. Yes. And next thing you know, here I am sitting on a podcast with Max Egan, and I've been following his work for years. So it was magical. And the people I met, the times I had at Max's bar, man, another memory that will always be in my thing is when you got up there and started jamming out and singing.
Yes. I just released a song with Alex Michael, a conspiracy music guru. We just, released a little duet song that's been killing. I think it's got over 150,000 views in a week or something. Like, it's doing pretty good.
Really? Nice. Yeah, I saw that. I saw that pop up. It was a good song. Another one. It's starting.
Yeah, I was so drunk when I got up at Max's bar.
Oh, yeah. We were all drunk. Man.
Some people are like, can you really sing? I'm like, yeah, I actually can.
But that's the fun.
But yeah, it was really great, you know, and everyone you met, it was just a great time. I can't announce this because it's not for sure, but they're talking about Anarch Europa. We were looking at Ibiza in early September, and now it looks like it might be Serbia somewhere, actually, near Liberland. So there might be an Anarch Europa in September early. Wow. But it cannot be announced yet. I'm just saying it's on the cards. I can't say for sure. So that might be happening. Max actually invited me to come and speak with him. He's going to be on tour. I think he's in Croatia for a month this month. But my work schedule didn't work out, and I couldn't come and do it. So I met him in 2017. I was like you. I found him in around 2008. And then he came to Copenhagen to speak. So we met him and he stayed with my buddy Glenn, you know, so we hung out for a few days and that's when I first met him. And we've been good friends ever since. So it was really nice to see him again, like in person. It's the first time I saw him again, you know, live since 2017, but he's such a great guy.
He is. He's a very good, he's a very generous man, man, and runs a hell of a bar, man. I had magic at the event during the day, and then we had the real magic at Max's bar. That's where it happened. I mean, the people I was just sitting there. I'm hanging out with you five times in August. I'm taking out with the crypto billionaire. I'm hanging out with Charlie Robinson. I'm hanging out with this person, that person, drinking like there is no tomorrow. Man, they made some rocking margaritas at that bar.
Oh, massive. Yeah. I was always last to leave.
Yeah, I did.
Beth Martin's always asked me, she's like, how the hell, man? You were the last guy to leave the bar and you're up jumping in the ocean at 8 a.m. I'm like, yeah, that's still, it's the ocean gave me all the energy to face the day again.
Yeah, totally.
They had me working, man. I was working my ass off at Acapulco.
Hey, so that was the first time you've ever emceed, you're saying, right?
Yeah, I had a speech, and then I had a panel discussion with a bunch of guys, alternative media people. And then I was the auctioneer every day for the auction and the raffles. Yeah. And then, they put me on MC for a day. Rebecca Scott. I had like five jobs, and I was helping Jack and Patrick run the podcast lounge. So I had like five jobs there or something, which is crazy. But it was great. Yeah, lovely.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I'm watching you up there on stage. You're natural with MCs because you did something. This is how I can tell somebody who has talent, right? Is you made an auction fun. That's not easy to do, man.
Yeah.
Those are raffles. If somebody like you that can get up there and make it fun, raise money, everybody in the audience is having a good time, and that 10 or 15 minutes just goes by like that. Somebody without talent, that can be the most grueling grueling longest 10 to 15 minutes you could ever experience from the audience standpoint and from the speaker standpoint. But you blew through that and you raised money. I mean, I saw you, it start to slow down, and I don't know what the hell you did, but you'd always get another bid or two, even if it's $50 more. Someone would always raise up $50 and stuff like that. And it all went to really good charities. It didn't go back into anybody's pockets except I think it was the wildlife sanctuary. It was the orphanage. And I believe that there was something else, the man's.
And we also had the guy who's been like the driver for them for the whole time, his house got destroyed in the hurricane. Yeah. And so that we finished his house. We did it. We met all the goals. Like we raised, you know, all the wonderful people there. They bid and they got a lot of value for money. And it was great. Yeah, we met all the goals, and I've never done an auction before. Probably never will again, but it was good. It was great fun, good spirit. And that's the whole thing with the anarchists is, you know, when the hurricane hit, as the government did fuck all for those people. They did nothing. Mm-hmm. And so Jeff's crew and all the crew from Anarchapulco, they got together, and I think we raised like $700,000. And got all the food and supplies and wheelchairs and everything out to the people in the poor areas. And the government did nothing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's what anarchy is about. Everyone thinks it's about burning cop cars and stealing candy from babies and old ladies. It's not about that. It's about saying, get the government out of our way.
Yeah.
Leave it to us. We'll take care of it. Yeah. And we did.
Yeah, I know on the National Guard setup that they had down there when you walk down the main road in Bonneville.
Yeah.
They had signs all over for Anarchapulco, thanking Anarchapulco. The city, the mayor of Acapulco stationed a cop car at the entrance of that road. And I know for anarchists, it's antithetical, but he did that as a sign of respect. So you have to take it as a sign of respect, even though it is like, hey, man, what's all the fuzz being around here? Where's all the fit? But it wasn't. And even the National Guards, and for everybody out there listening, the National Guards they had pickup trucks. And in the back of the pickup trucks were full of heavily armed men to the teeth. Like, mess around with them and then they'll make you Swiss cheese in 2 seconds, right? Those guys were cool as hell. You wave at them, and even though they had the baklava on, you could still tell they're smiling and waving back at you. Just to let every, I think it was one of those things, just let everybody know, y'all are safe. Y'all are good. We're going to take care of our anarchists that took such good care of us.
Yeah, they were really cool. Like, even we got saved on the way down. We drove from Mexico City to Acapulco in a rental car that had a shitty back tire there was an alignment problem. We had two blowouts in the mountains with no cell phone coverage, and we had no more spare tires. And we pushed the car down a mountain, you know, till we found one bar of coverage, called the, you know, Acapulco. They came with some tires that didn't fit. And then these guys turned up, the Angelos Verdes, the Green Angels. Mm-hmm. They just turned up. Their job is to patrol the roads. So we sent our friend Jack back to get new tires. We sent Mike and Sammy off to Acapulco with the guy who brought the wrong tires. And I'm standing out here in Federale country, Mexico is supposed to be so dangerous, with a car with no tires. It's getting dark. I'm like, Jesus, man, I had a couple Corona cans. So I just started drinking those and nothing happened. You know, they saved our ass. We got ourselves in Acapulco. So, you know, Mexico's not dangerous like they say it is. It was beautiful.
It wasn't. I felt zero fear while I was down there, and I'm walking around like you. Because we're hanging out, because it's barred all hours of the night. Never once did I have a fear of who's behind me, what's around, am I going to get jumped? It was opposite. It was just everybody was laid back. Even the stray dogs were fucking laid back, man. You know, I remember walking along, and it's almost like you see them, you're like, hola, perro. Looks up and going, hola, gringo. ¿Qué tal? Hey, bien, ¿y tú? Sí. Okay, buenas venidas. And you just walk along, man.
They're also like wild horses running around in the middle of the streets and stuff. It was just weird. It was cool.
It was cool. There's a lot of things about Mexico. You don't have the conveniences that you have here in the States or in Europe, but there's something about that freedom. You know, seeing a house that's built that I know damn well wouldn't pass any construction code in the United States, but it works and it's cool and nobody cares. It's not like you're going to have the inspectors going, well, you're going to have to tear that down and we're going to have to do it and we're going to charge all this money in Mexico. It's like, eh, who cares? Like Max said, his neighbor built a swimming pool and the city showed up. And they're like, oh, well, eh, guess we got to redo our maps. That's it.
You have to like tacos, though, if you're eating out, unless you go shopping at Walmart. Like, you got to like tacos because that's all there is to eat.
Yeah, but I love them tacos, man.
But they were delicious. Yeah.
That totally. Taco stand that they had, the Hermanos, whatever, that place was rocking and it was full the whole time. From the time they opened until the middle of the night when they closed, that place was full and it was all locals. So, you know, that's where the good food is when all the locals are packing the place.
I eat there every night. Ridiculously good.
Yeah. Most time I ate at the event, but you know, you need a little bit of food to absorb the alcohol. So that was really nice because right down Max's bar, you go to the main street, you walk down 100 yards and there it is. Get your tacos, come back, go up there. And hell, if you even want to take a swim in Max's bar, he had a pool, everybody. Yes. Max Egan had a pool at his bar.
In the bar. It's crazy. Yeah, great bar. Yeah, really cool. Yeah. And that was great, too. Anarchapulco, they, you know, if you were speakers or VIP passes and non-speakers, they had breakfast, lunch, and dinner buffets for everybody, and it was great food.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. So it's nice, you know. They really, hats off to all of them. They put on it's a top-shelf event.
Yeah, I agree. We could talk all day long on Anarchapulco, but I think everybody out there gets the idea. Plus, they're probably tired of hearing me talk.
Yeah, if you weren't there, you had to be there, but you should go there next time you weren't there.
Everybody, it's like sex and a dead show. You could hear explanations as long as you want, but you'll never be able to understand what it's like until you attend it, you know? Mm-hmm. You're never going to know what it's like to bust a nut with a fine-looking senorita until you do it. Someone could tell you all day long. Sorry if I'm being crass out there, listeners. Or you don't know what it's like to twirl a dead show with 2.5 heads of some green sunshine, right? Listen to some crappy music, but having the time of your life. Anarchapulco was like that. So everybody out there, if you can, it's Anarchapulco 2025. Get out there if you can. I know it is a chunk of change. It's a long way to go, but don't fear Mexico because here's the deal about last year's. A Cat 5, quote, hurricane, two earthquakes, and a U.S. travel advisory warning against Acapulco couldn't stop the event. Didn't even phase it. So
I went back to bed and there was the 6 a.m. hurricane earthquake was pretty big. Like my bed was moving off the wall and I woke up. I'm like, earthquake. I just went back down to sleep again.
I did the same thing, dude.
Fuck it.
It shook me out of bed. It's shaking. I woke up and I'm like, all right. That was probably about in the 4 range. I live in California, grew up on the West Coast.
All right. Yeah,
okay. So I'm like, okay, that's what we call a California foot massage. So that's about the worst of it. Anything else is going to be an aftershock. Okay, good. I'm like you. I literally, same with you. When else was over, I analyzed it. I rolled back over and went back to sleep. I'm like, all right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was great.
And I was on the ground floor 200 meters off the beach. Wow. So if there was a tsunami, we would have been screwed. But I didn't give a shit. I just went back to bed.
Yeah. Dude, that was a California foot massage. If it was a tsunami, I'm like, the wave that would have generated would have been about knee high. I'm good. I'm up third floor, a few hundred feet above the ocean.
You were up. Yeah, we were on the ground floor right on the beach. But it was like, whatever. It's fuck whatever. It.
If it's my time, it's my time.
If you had to go anywhere, that's the place to go.
Yeah, that's true. That is true, man. If the Grim Reaper comes and knock on your door, you want that door to be down there in Acapulco, Mexico.
Oh, yeah. Right?
Die with a smile on your face. That's what I say. Die with a smile on your face.
Amen to that.
All right. So let's get into some meat. You know, I was watching a bunch of your podcasts and your shows. And by the way, Space Busters Rules, dude, you cover some stuff on there that's like, I know a little about a lot of stuff, but I'm watching that going, that's very, very interesting. Well, it's like your presentation that you gave out there on the Irish, the ancient Irish language, I believe you're talking about. and how you were able to take that language and tie that back into ancient esoteric writings and make this connection between the two, which to me was very, very impressive. Now, I got the memory of a flea. When God was giving out memories, I thought he said memories, been paying for it ever since, right?
Yeah.
But what I do remember from it, it was extremely well done and extremely convincing, compelling, I guess you could say. And if you could just start off, just give us a little brief little summary on what you were talking about during that presentation.
Well, one of the main things is there's a lot of people in the truth community saying the Jews are in charge of everything, the Jews. And I showed people, and I've been on AlphaCast recently with Bear Lando and Mike Winter for a 2-hour version of my 50-minute presentation. I showed them, no, it's not the Jews. It's the Roman Catholic Church. It's the Knights of Malta, the Jesuits, the Knights of St. John. And it's also the Swiss Templars, the Black Nobility. The Jews are not running anything. And I also showed one of the things the Irish Catholic Church, the Roman Catholic Church, the Church of England have been hiding is that where all these ancient cultures have these legends of these white, blue-eyed, red-bearded people who come around all the world, gave them sun-worshipping religion, civilization, this, that. It's the Irish. And it's old Irish language, Gaelgig, not Gaelic, but Gaelgig. The Irish were there thousands of years before Columbus, or Columbus didn't even actually set foot on North America.
No, he didn't.
Before anyone ever got there, the Irish had been going there for thousands of years all around spreading civilization. And the church has hidden that from everyone. And the language is undeniable. And the word Hebrew is Irish for Eber. These were the priests of Iesa Kriost, the son, Jesus Christ. Right. When they got to Florida, the Florida Seminole Indians and four other tribes were speaking ancient Hebrew, Irish Hebrew. And they couldn't figure it out. They were even wearing their hair in like little locks, like, you know, like Jews do. And they're like, how the hell are these Native Americans speaking Hebrew? A very weird dialect of it. Well, it's because Hebrew is Irish Eber. And so I went through all the Irish words and terms and who built the pyramids and. This is all coming from Ireland, all of this. And they don't want you to know this because I'm not even sure Christopher Columbus is a real guy. Mm-hmm. Or his name would have been Cristobal Colonia. He would have been Cristobal Fra Colonia, right? But the mm-hmm. Catholic Church, for whatever reason, they did not fund his expedition to the Americas. It was actually Catherine and what's his name from Spain who were going broke. Mm-hmm. Now, you'd have to say Genoa had the largest sailing fleet at the time in the world, the best mariner fleet. Why didn't they send him to the New World? And the reason is they didn't want them to get there and find out that Iesa Kriost is the sun and that all the Native Americans, Mexicans, and South Americans already knew Jesus Christ was Iesa Kriost, the sun, had the crosses up, everything. They did not want this to get out. So they didn't fund him, if that's even his real name, if he's even a real character.
So what,
and I'm not sure he is.
So let me wrap this head my head around this, because the knowledge you drop, man, it's just like. Poof. So what you're saying is that the Americas were actually populated and settled probably millennia before, hundreds of centuries or millennia before we quote. Discovered it, which is crock of crap if you read Secret Destiny of America by Manly P. Hall. And when they got there, they had already the influence of the ancient Irish language, the Hebrew type influences that are
Eber,
already there.
Yeah, and Irish, the priests of Jesus Christ or Iesa Kriost were called the Hebrew, H-E-B-E-R. And the people who followed them were called Yudes. There's no J in ancient Irish Gaelge.
Right.
So Yudes is Jew. So the word Jew in Hebrew come from the Irish words Eber, a priest of An or Iesa Kriost, and a Yud is a follower of the wisdom of them. They were already there. Sorcia, Soricus is an Irish word for the east, the sun in the east. While the Syracuse Indians in the eastern United States were named that from the Irish, who called them the Syracuse because they live in the east of the United States. The Sioux Indians, some of them are white with blonde hair and blue eyes, and had cobblestone houses the way the Irish, Welsh, and Northern Scottish build houses. Not teepees. They were living in cobblestone Irish houses, right? And Sioux is Sorcia. This is Irish. Sumeria is summer. That's an Irish word for the summer. The Irish were already there for thousands of years before spreading this knowledge. They're the Anunu. They're the Hyksos. The historians can't figure out who were these weird Hyksos who were these foreigners who came to the eastern lands in Egypt and settled all in the Middle East. Well, that's an Irish word for the tick with the, you don't pronounce the T, Hyksos, are the Irish priests of the sun, the shepherd kings. And the Hyksos are called the shepherd kings. Well, it's Tixhouse, Hyksos. It's an Irish name. It's them. They came from Ireland. That's these white, blue-eyed, red-haired, bearded people who turned up all around the world giving this knowledge. It was the Irish. They were there thousands of years before we ever even touched foot on the North American continent. And that's why when the Spaniards landed in Mexico and South America, there's the story that they welcomed the return of the gods. Well, they thought it was the Irish coming back.
Yeah, it was.
But it wasn't. It was the Spaniards who came back and killed them and stole all their gold.
Yeah, it was. I believe it is the story of Quetzalcoatl, who was a blonde. I don't know if he was blonde, but he was definitely a white boy with a beard. Okay, let's just say
they always
that.
Are. Kulka Khan. Yeah, Khan is an Irish name for the sun.
Yeah.
Genghis Khan, they said, had blue eyes and red hair. The head of the Khans. Khan is a name for the sun for in Irish.
So
mm-hmm. Yeah, go on.
So with this being said, when did they, for instance, settle the Americas? Do we have a date? Do we have a time? Or is this just based upon ancient writings and anecdotal evidence?
This is based on all the ancient native oral traditions. They didn't write all this, but all those pyramids you see down in Belize and all these were the Irish who built that. Yeah, it was them. They built all that. There were even white tribes down in white Native American tribes down in South America and Central America. So we don't have a timeline because we don't know our true timelines. All of our timelines, the Roman Catholic Church has been inventing fake historians to plant fake previous stories to give them the right to rule. So we really don't know. We know the Old Testament is Irish lore, and they say that's from around 300 to 400 BC. Now, that comes from much older Irish lore. So for all we know Sumeria is Irish for summer. Or the East. So when the Irish priests of An or Yesakrios got to Sumeria, it reminded them of summer. Now, the Sumerian tablets go back, they say these are 2500 BC. So we're looking at 4,500 years ago, they settled Sumeria. So it could be that long ago they were in the Americas. We don't know. We have no idea. We have no timelines for any of this, but thousands and thousands of years ago. Well, in fact, Cristobal Colón or Columbus, the story goes, his navigator, he went to Dublin and got an Irish navigator to get him to the Americas. Now, why did he get an Irish navigator? Because the Irish had been going there forever and ever. It wasn't their first trip.
So
Greenland. People say, oh, Greenland is it's all ice and it's not green. Well, it is in the summer down in the south of Greenland. Mm-hmm. And green is Irish, the Emerald Isles. It was called Greenland because it reminded the Irish of the summer back home, the green fields of Ireland. The Irish used to stop in Greenland on their way to North America, what we'd call New York now, and that was where they would stop halfway through their sailing. The Irish stopped at Greenland and named it Greenland because Ireland is the Emerald Isles, the Emerald Tablets of Thoth. So green tablets of Thoth. Yeah.
Something just popped in my brain. So we're talking about ancient civilization essentially being seeded by an ancient tribe of Ireland.
Ireland, Welsh, yeah. I mean, someone sent me a video where if you speak Welsh, you can read Egyptian hieroglyphics.
Really?
Yeah. So we're talking about Ireland, the Welsh, and the Northern Scots, yeah. So now the guys who translated through the Rosetta Stone, the hieroglyphics, they were using letters, but when you speak Welsh, each of these pictographs is a Welsh word, not a letter. Mm. Right. So when the names are on these things, Cleopatra and this, that, and the other, these aren't letters. These are full Welsh sayings that have sayings, and the Welsh people can read hieroglyphics.
Wow.
Because it didn't come from Egypt. It was brought to Egypt from these Irish or Welsh, Irish, Northern Scottish. You should call them all one group of people. It's not just the Irish, and the Finnish are involved as well.
So how does that tie into Atlantis? Because I've heard people talk about original civilizations when they go back to Plato's Atlantis. When you look at ancient temples such as pyramids throughout the world, there's a consistency with the construction, with the dynamics of it, how it's aligned astrologically. And they're all over the world, and they're created in different geological times. But in just different timelines or different time periods with all these similarities. So I've heard people talk about the ancient Atlantis civilization spreading out throughout the world. Well, the legend of Atlantis puts it somewhere, I believe, in the Atlantic. So how does the story of ancient Atlantis tie into the ancient Irish, which therefore, according to what you're saying here, propagated throughout the world and built these massive temples, right, and pyramids that we to this day, with all of our technology, and we think we're the bee's knees when it comes to knowledge, still to this day cannot build, or do we have the understanding of the actual architecture behind, say, the pyramids of Giza, when you start breaking them down mathematically? And I've seen people
Giza, that's Jesus, that's the sun. Giza is an Irish word for Yesa, the sun. But yeah, Connor McDowry, if people want to read a great book, Connor McDowry, Irish Wisdom in the Bible, in the Bible and Pyramids, he contends that Atlantis is Ireland, Wales, and Northern Scotland, that is the island in the Atlantic that did all this. Now, the problem is the dating is way off, as Jason Brashears from Archaics talks about. We have no writings older than the Sumerian tablets, which are only about 5,000 years old, 4,500 years old. Mm-hmm. So we don't know that Plato is a real guy. There's no proof that this is not Roman Catholic Church, who tried to move all our history to Greece and Egypt so no one would look at Ireland and Scotland and Wales. We don't know this is a real guy at all. And we have no writings going back to 11,000 years ago. There's no proof of any such thing. So his contention is that the Atlanteans are the Irish. Atlan is still an Irish word. And that it's been hidden, that Atlantis is a decoy, so that we don't know that the real Atlantis was Ireland, Wales, and Northern Scotland, which are right there in the Atlantic Ocean.
So how does that play in with like Enki and Enu, the Sumerian, basically seeders of humanity? God, Lucifer, the whole thing can be tied into those things.
Yeah. So I can show you if you want. Can I share my screen?
Hold on a second. Let me set it up to where you can share it. Oh, darn it. I'm still learning this Zoom stuff. So if I make a mistake, everybody, please have mercy on the brainless. All right. I think you're good.
All right. Let me share my screen here. I can show you.
Please.
Desktop. Boom. See if I can do this myself. Can you see my desktop now?
I can see it. Boy, you got folders up the wazoo, amigo. It's
I'm
your
a
brain.
Busy boy. I'm a busy boy. Here we go. Okay, here we go. So I'm going to blow this up. Is that full screen?
No, it is. Yeah, I can see it.
Yeah. Okay. So here's Egypt and the pharaohs are Irish lore, right?
Mm-hmm.
So a pharaoh comes from the Irish word fear or far. Here in Denmark, where I live, far means father or man. Our father who art in heaven, the sun. Road means ride, the sensual man or rowan, two sexes and the sexless spirit. When you look at all the names of the pharaohs, they're just Irish words flipped backwards. These aren't real people, the pharaoh list. The first pharaoh, King Menes, he digs the river Nile. Mene is the Irish word for mene, May, month, monthly, where we get the women's menstruation period. And he dug the river Nile, which is an Irish word, newel, Nile, fool, the blood in the body. So these are metaphors for the spirit coming into the human body. The next Egyptian king was Potipharer, which comes from the Irish word poti, the bowels, the belly, and fur, man, truth, wisdom, a priest of the sun, a priest of Yesa Kriost. So Enoch or Enoch, Enki, right? Enoch, Enki, and Enlil is an Irish word for a wise sage and enlightened man. Moses is mouse, saturate, soak, swimming. And I showed you the Hyksos there before. So Enlil and Enki, and their father is Ea, which is an Irish word for the sun. I'll show you this. Hold on. I have this somewhere. There's your Irish sun gods, but yeah. So Enlil and Enki come from Ea and An. They are the two brothers who are Sulamor, Romulus, and Remus, who founded Rome. These aren't aliens. These are signs for the upper wisdom of man, a man living in his higher chakra and his spiritual knowledge, and his lower animal self. And the two brothers hate each other, right? And their father is Ea, which is another Irish word for the sun. So Enlil and Enki, it's Zechariah Sitchin's who spread all this bullshit. He's spread all this nonsense. Mm-hmm. They're not aliens from the planet Nibiru with their father. These are Irish metaphors for the higher aspect of man and the lower aspect of man. That's where all of this comes from. And it's Sitchin's who shared his office with a CIA agency, who no was the way. Only one.
You hold serious? On man.
Yeah.
Everybody has a side note. It's been blowing these people out of my brain, right?
Charlie, yeah.
Steve Poikinen does this. He's my buddy that runs AM Wake Up, right? You know, it's like Tucker. He lays down truth about Tucker. I'm like, well, geez, I used to like that guy till I heard you. Oh, Tulsi Gabbard. Oh, thanks, Steve. And the list goes on and on and on and on. You just blew something out of the water for me. So,
well, that's the problem is like so many. We have Akkadian dictionaries, and so many scholars challenged Zechariah Sitchin's and said we can read these glyphs. They challenged to debate him, and he said, no, I won't debate any of you. And you're like, why?
Yeah, why?
Because all of them said your translations are nothing like our translations of this. And it just so happens he was on a CIA-owned building on the same floor with the CIA office. And you're like, where did you get all these translations? You're the only guy who has all these tablets. Where did you get them? How did you get them? And you're the only guy who got them. Like, where? How did this happen, right? Yeah. So this guy's a front. He was making all this shit up. Wow. And it was his 12 Planet books that got everyone to this day on this whole alien crap, ancient aliens, all this crap. Because they don't want you to know it was the Irish. They don't, and anyone who can speak Gaelic can, it's clear it's the Irish. It's not even debatable. It's clear, cut in stone.
So as far as the creation myth goes, because I mean, Enoch and Enlil, I always mess up the other ones. That was essentially the creation story of humanity. So how, what is the Irish, and I can't pronounce this, I'm going to say ancient Irish story of how man and women were created on this earth? Did they come out of primordial soup, like the secularists want to say, the scientists, or was it basically, were we seeded by an outside force that didn't originate from the earth?
The Anunnaki are the Enoch. They're the Irish priests of wisdom. They didn't fall from the heavens. They came from ships across the heavens. In the old days, you could see as far as the stars go. So these are mistranslations. These white men came in ships of 50 after a cataclysm, and they came from as far as the stars, not from the stars. And they found the daughters of men, the little dark indigenous people they ran into. Now, these guys were tall back then. They were 6 foot, 6'3". They still are up here in Scandinavia. Mm-hmm. I'm 5'11", and I'm very short here. Like, I'm a short guy. They found these little brown, Pakistanis, Indians, they're tiny. Peruvians, mm-hmm. These people are still only 5 foot tall to this day.
Right, yeah.
So these giants with all this God technology rocked up and found the daughters of these little brown people beautiful, and they came under them. They came in them.
Right.
And they made children. They weren't aliens from outer space. They were white dudes from Ireland who came in boats after a cataclysm and reestablished civilization. That's what this is. They were the Enoch, the Anunnaki, or the Anu. These are Irish white guys. That's all it is. Really? They're not. And the Elohim in the Bible and the Genesis creation, that's just the seven planets vesting all of our spiritual, that's vesting all of the spirit into the physical manifestation of man. So they say, let us make man in our image. Well, that's the sun, moon, and the five wandering planets. That's the Elohim. Mm-hmm. People say, oh, Elohim is plural for God. Yeah, well, yeah, it's an old Irish word for the stars and the planets and the sun and the moon. It's not gods. It's the gods, which are where we get all our electromagnetic vestiges and force and form. Mm-hmm. They're the portals for spirit to come into this realm and manifest and make your seven chakras and the seven music notes and the seven colors of the rainbow and the seven this, that, and the other. Right. Mm-hmm. So that's what that is. They're not talking about gods. They're talking about what the ancients called the gods, which are the sun, the moon, and the five most effective nearest wandering planets or stars, you could call them, mm-hmm. which is where astrology comes from. You're affected. Anyone who does astrology knows the sun, moon, and these five planets affect you.
Yeah, well, that ties right into what I've learned about religions. And they all seem to come back to the worship of the sun, sex and sun. When you break everything down to it, that seems to be the origin where all of them have that pinch point. And
right.
I
can show you that too. Can I show my, if I can share my screen?
Where you want, man.
I can show you.
Please.
If you look here, hold on, I'll just try to blow this up. You can see an alchemical here. So you've got the alchemist symbols on top, then you got the planets. These are the seven I'm talking about, the sun, moon, Mars, Mercury, Jupiter, Venus, and Saturn, right? Mm-hmm. In the alchemical metals, they represent gold, silver, iron, mercury, tin, copper, lead. And then there are days of our week, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. But you'll also see at the bottom down here, they each are a part of the body. The sun is the heart. The moon is the head, right? It just keeps going on and on around the body. Well, these come from Irish words. So I'll show people. There's your archons. They are the seven lights and the planets. That's the archons. Mm-hmm. And they vest the seven sins. But where do I have this? Oh, here we go. So what we're being told is Jesus Christ by the Catholic Church. It's mm-hmm. the Irish Gnostic priests. They had a religion called the Priests of Iesa Krios, the sun. And it also signified the descent of spirit into the physical body of man through the sun, the moon, and the five planets as portals. So Iesa wasn't a guy. It was a religion, a sun worshiping religion, as you just said. The Irish words are, there's no J in Irish. So Iesa, Ies, Hesiod, Hezig, Kriost, Bel, which is Baal, So everyone's like, oh, the ancients worshipped the demon Baal. No, they were sun worshippers. Baal is Beul. And that's where we get the word Zeus, Jesus, Christ, Dios, Dios, Baal, Ebalus, St. Paul. Oh, the St. Paul, he's Baal, the sun. All of these are just words for the sun. They're old Irish words for the sun. Now, the Catholic Church doesn't want you to know this because they keep their power by making you think that they are the voice of God, Jesus Christ, incarnated as human flesh, and the Pope is the holy pontiff and the spokesperson for them, and they can save your soul. So as I told you earlier, Hebrews and Jews were the Irish priests of the fire, the sun, Yesa. The Irish word Eber is Ea. That's Enlil and Enki's dad. It's called Ea, right? The Enlil and Enki's dad is called Ea. He's not an alien from Nibiru. He's the sun, the fire, the sun. And then we get the word Hebrew from that. The Phoenicians, everyone says the Phoenicians, they've been all over the world. And we found Phoenician graves. That's because the Phoenicians are the Irish Phoenicians. Coming from the word Fion, Fin, the sun. They were the priests of Yesa Kriost, or Ea, or An, who went around the world and taught everyone this. They didn't come from Iran. They came to Iran, which is Aryan, which is Ireland, right? Jew comes from the Irish word you, yud, the day, light, followers of the light. So Jews are followers of the sun worship, who are following the Hebrews, the Hebrew priests. And here in Denmark, J-U-L is the word for Christmas, Yule.
Yuletide.
So our word for Christmas is Yule, which is Irish. Yule, Yule, the highest power, the dignity of the sun, learning and knowledge, which is where we get our words July and Julius Caesar, another, I would contend, fake historical character. Right?
Right, yeah, yeah.
And the Irish built the great pyramids. Cheops, the great pyramid of Giza, represents the spirit in the purified or regenerated man who has overcome his lower animal desires and has come up into his higher chakra system. And Cheops backwards, if you just take Cheops and go backwards, it's Spoic. That's the Irish word for spirit. The Great Pyramid of Giza is named Cheops, Spoek backwards. The Irish Catholic, the Roman Catholic Church just flips these names backwards so you don't know what you're looking at. And Giza comes from the Irish word Yesa. That's where we get Giza or Giza or Hezig. There's no J in Irish, so Hezig is pronounced Hezij. See this on the left? Hezij. Hezig is actually pronounced Hezij, which it, take that backwards. Jesus, 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 right? Hiesa, Hezi, Hiesa is pronounced Hezij in Irish. Gaza, Giza.
Giza, Gaza.
See? Gaza Strip. What's going on in Gaza right now? The Roman Catholics are after Gaza. Right? That's all this stuff is. It's very old Irish lore. And they've hidden it from us because they don't want you to know that that's where it came from. That's where the Irish were all sent off as indentured slaves. There was Scottish Highland genocides, right? The Irish were sent around just as much as all the blacks in the slave trade. They want to get rid of them because they don't want people to know that they, that their religion of Yesa Kriost is what Jesus Christ is. Because the Catholic Church makes all its power and money on making you believe Jesus Christ is a guy, God incarnated in the flesh, walking around in the Middle East, who let the Romans crucify him so that you could believe and you'd be saved as long as you come to their building on Sundays.
Well, actually, the original day of worship was on a Saturday. But it has been changed to Sunday, except for the Seventh Day Adventist and some other Christian churches that I know of that actually worship the original Sabbath day, which was Saturday. But
Right.
We know how Romans
Saturn, which is Saturn Day. That used to Saturn Day, yeah. And you go into the church on Sunday at high noon when the sun is at its highest point in the day.
I see it.
And you, right?
Now
when you look at the Irish made all the Egyptian gods. So when you start looking into this, the word horizon comes from Horus.
Right.
Horizon. That's the sun at 6 o'clock in the morning in a northern science in the north. Mm-hmm. And then when the sun gets up to noon at its highest, hottest point, it's called Ra. That's where we get radiation.
The sun god Ra.
Right. Horus, Ra at noon. At 6 p.m., the sun starts to set.
Which is set.
It forces evil brother Set.
Right.
Because sun radiation set. And then at night, when all the darkness and evil comes, you have Isis, the moon. Horus, Ra, Set, Isis. Wow. And you also have Horus and Set sitting on your shoulder as Jesus and Satan. The good, you know, don't do it. Don't do it. Do it. Do it. Right. That's also Horus and Set. So everyone's sitting in the church on Sunday at noon when Ra is the highest in the sky saying amen at the end of their prayers. Amen, Ra, the sun at noon on a Sunday.
Wow.
And they think they're talking about Jesus Christ. They're talking about the old Irish words for Iesu Christ.
Wow.
The sun. That's it. It's that simple.
Well, I can say my mind is officially blown there, Mr. Steve. I'm going to have to go watch this segment a few times and let it sink in.
Yeah.
You brought up, and here's a good segue. You're talking about the Roman Catholic Church. And we were talking earlier about who really runs the world. Who's behind all this devastation? And a lot of people I hear, oh, it's the Jews. I disagree. I think it's the Jews are just one spoke in a much bigger wheel. And it really kind of not perturbs me, I guess, but irks me in a way when I hear certain people saying it's this one group that's running the world, it's ruining the world, it's the Jews, it's the Catholics, it's this, it's that. And I see it as a much bigger wheel, which in my belief opinion is in touch with an esoteric world and at the very pinnacle of global power, the capstone, if you will. There is an influence which is esoteric that they believe in, and that influence, whether one believes in it or not, whether it's real or not, these people believe in it. And through that esoteric connection to demons, spirits, angels, whatever one wants to call them, that knowledge comes down through the top and gets permeated all the way down to the bottom of the pyramid. Kind of where we live. We're at the bottom of the pyramid. I'm nowhere near that capstone, nor do I ever want to be, because as Professor Griff from what's the rap band Public Enemy said, he says, man, if you want to enter that $20 million club, you got to take an oath. And that's all he said, and I picked up on that meaning big time. Most other people go right over their heads. And that to me represents just part of this power that's coming down from the top from agendas that are esoteric. Does that make sense? Do you see something similar to that? And if you don't, what do you see?
Well, I don't want to get too deep into it because I'm actually making a film on this, and I did a 2-hour talk with Mike Winter and Bear Lando on Alphabetic, and we're doing part two, but
cool.
The Roman Catholic Church is a control vessel. It's a vehicle. Mm-hmm. And the Committee of 300 is also the control vehicle. So who are behind this are the Swiss Knights Templar, who are the old army of the Catholic Church. Mm-hmm. The Jesuits, the Knights of Malta, everything's in Switzerland. Davos, World Economic Forum, United Nations, Red Cross,
Bilderberg,
Bank of International, all of them. That's Switzerland is the Knights Templar, who are the Vatican's old army. Now it's the Jesuits, the Knights of Malta, Knights of St. John, who are in Sweden. You ever notice how Switzerland and Sweden are neutral in every war?
Right, yeah.
That's because the Knights of St. John are in Sweden and the Knights Templar are in Switzerland, and that's where all their money is and all their gold and all their treasure. That's why they never let them get bombed.
Yeah. Don't that's bomb where the gold.
They also, the Knights Templar became the Knights Hospitaller, who made the hospitals where you get your birth certificate and your all caps name. And now, you know, everyone who knows about the free man and the straw man and all that, this comes out of the Knights Hospitaller. These aren't Jewish organizations. These are Roman Catholic knight organizations. And then there's the Black nobility families who very early figured out to get their families in as the popes.
Medici's.
And as the royalty, yeah. The Medici's, yeah, Orsini's, Aldo Brandini, the Breakspears who run, Henry Breakspear runs China out of Macau, China. But again, what's the problem is the families who control the organizations who use the Vatican and the religions and all that, the organizations themselves have already gotten out of control. They're up and running. So you can go, people are like, go kill the Black nobility, and that's the end of that. And you're like, no, it's not, because the powers, the institutions are already running now. Do you see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. They're like hydras. They say, cut off the head. And you're like, the hydra grows back a new head. You can go kill the Aldo Brandinis and Orsini. Pepe Orsini is the great pope. He's the head of the whole thing. Yeah. But it doesn't matter, because the Committee of 300 organizations and all the organizations in the Vatican, it's already up and running. So you can kill all the people running it, but it's already running. It's like a meme, you know what I mean? It's out there now on its own, if you know what I'm saying. You'd have to take down the whole thing. Yep. And so the only way to really do that is if you work for any of these organizations, you have to quit.
Yeah.
To not work for them so that you take down the organizations. That's how you would stop this, because people are like, seven people run the world. And I'm like, you could kill all seven of them right now. You could go hang them. And I promise you, the shit that they run will still be running.
Yeah. Well, they think in generational plans. I mean, we think in short-term plans. Like, for example, our political system in America. Right. We have 4-year terms. We have 2-year terms. Most of the time, as soon as they get into office, they're starting to raise money and spending their money to get money for the next one.
Yeah.
So we think in very short terms. When you talk about these families, they think generational. They think for them, like, for instance, a Nelson Rockefeller. Right. I believe that was the original Rockefeller. Yeah. These people know that what I'm setting up today, these things are probably not going to manifest themselves until my great grandchildren take over. So I agree with you. They have very long term planning. So to see them, to go back to your reference, you cut off the head of the Hydra, right? There's 20 more. Go back to my analogy of spoke and a wheel. In a wheel, you could clip a couple spokes and that wheel is still going to turn.
Yeah.
Right. So it might wobble it a little bit, but it's still going to exist and it's still going to turn. And there's many more facets to, at least my opinion, one man's humble opinion, to this global power mechanism. And I think it goes right along what you said. You can kill the person, but the system that they have created or they're working for will still continue. Because like a crack dealer, you could take a crack dealer.
You know, go ahead. Yeah.
You could take a crack dealer. Right on the corner slinging that poison, right? You could arrest him and take him off that block. But guess what? There's 10 more waiting to take his place. So as soon as you take one out.
Still there. Yeah, the crack market's there. It's too late.
Yeah. Exactly. Then somebody else is going to pop up. And until you can actually get to the cure of why they exist, which is the demand for that very powerful drug. As who was it? Oh, not James Brown, but Super Freak Guy. In the
Rick James.
Hell
of a drug.
Cocaine's a hell of a drug.
Cocaine, hell of a drug.
Hell of a drug.
See, this is the problem. You know, when you take the word SHARS, the stars are SHARS. That's another old name for them. Mm-hmm. You get the Caesars.
Right.
The Tsars of Russia. Mm-hmm. The Germans were the Kaisars, right?
Right. I'm seeing similarities.
In England... When I call you a sir, that comes from czar, 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 czar. In England, the word sir is pronounced sire, czar, Caesar, czar. So people are like, politicians, they're just dumb puppets. No, 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 no. When the Knights Templar took off, the old royalty and all the black nobility families, the oldest born male got the whole royalty. He became king, got all the fortune. Right. The younger brothers got nothing. They went off to become the Templar Crusaders because they had no money. The dad gave all the money to the oldest brother.
Right.
So they went off and became the Templars, and they invented banking, not the Jews. Yeah. They learned it out there, but they did all the usury and the Templar banking and all that.
Right.
So now the thing is, what they do is, instead of the older brother gets to be the king for the year, they have countries where you have democracies where the younger brothers get to be the czar for 4 years or 7 years. That's when you learn all the U.S. presidents are related to, right?
Charlemagne, I believe. There's a connection with
Charlemagne and King Edward III, right? They're all related to these two guys. Now each one of the younger brothers gets a turn to be a czar or a Caesar or a sire, or he gets 4 to 7 years to run the roost. All your congresses, all your Senate people, this is why they're sitting there 40 years. They are in these families too. They're not puppets. They are in the families. They're all related to each other. And there are politicians who can obviously get elected in. Mm-hmm. But for the majority of them are these families. They just have the younger brothers now. And younger brother gets to be king for 4 years, you know, where he never did before.
Right.
And then it's all coming out of Switzerland, the Templars, and also Sweden, the Knights of St. John, and the Knights of Malta, out of both Malta. I mean, this is quite interesting when you look, you know, there's some Egyptian gods. I won't really get into this, but two of the Egyptian gods, one of them has the head of an American falcon that's indigenous to America. What the hell is that bird head doing in Egypt?
Or corn. Well,
the Irish.
Or
the
corn.
Irish brought that home.
In hieroglyphs. I'm sorry, go ahead.
The other god has a dog. It's a dog that's indigenous to Malta. What's it doing in Egypt drawn on the head of a god? This, the Irish brought this over. Then these families took over all that. These families got into power. These black nobility families, these Templars, Charlemagne in the Vatican. So it's really all coming out of the rise. When people want to know who's running this world, yes, it's the Vatican, but that's just one of their control tools. They're in charge of all the top Muslim Arabs too. They're in charge of the Jews. They're in charge. They've got all of them under their fingers, right? But it's a network of Swiss Templars, Knights of Malta, Jesuits, Knights of St. John, Knights Hospitaller, Opus Dei, the Vatican, the Gray Pope, the Black Pope. The Gray Pope is Pepe Orsini right now. He's the main man pulling the strings. But again, you could kill him right now on the street. Go shoot Pepe Orsini. The thing will still run fine without him. Like, you know, it's not gonna be like, oh my God, Pepe's dead. What are we all gonna do? You know, they already got what they're gonna do. They're like, well, we'll just promote, you know, whatever his little brother is, Luigi or whoever the fuck his brother is.
Yeah, we'll just put him in there. We'll burn a little bit of white paper here and then the black paper for all the people to see. And then when the right color comes out, then they have their new pontiff.
Because the white pope's third in charge. Yeah, the gray pope is the head of the Knights of Malta.
And the bank.
And the next head guy is the black pope, who's the head of the Jesuits. Mm-hmm. Then there's now they've got Francis, the actual pope in the Vatican. He's a Jesuit.
He's a black pope.
So for the first time, the Jesuits got a Jesuit also as the white pope. Man. So they don't really care if you kill, they don't care if you kill Francis. They'll just put another guy in who's under their thumb. They don't give a shit. Because that's what I'm saying. The system is running now, and it runs well for all of them. They're all doing really well for themselves.
Oh, yeah, they are. They're living lives of kings, wearing robes that have gold thread through them. Meanwhile, their partitioners in third world countries are taking what little resources they have and giving it to the Roman Catholic Church, still living in poverty, still living in poverty. Meanwhile, the people at the very top who are saying, we have the only people that have the direct connection to God is the Pope. The Pope is God incarnated, which when you look at the biblical things, kind of blasphemous, because the Bible says there's man and there's God and there's Jesus, and there's a clear delineation between the two.
Yeah. He's the Pontiff Maximus. He's the voice of God. He's the one who deems that the royalty are appointed by the pontiff as the divine right to rule.
Yeah.
Well, who can give you the divine right to rule? Well, the Pope.
Exactly.
So he's the one who appoints the King of England or the Queen of England and the King of Spain and the King of France. See, the Pope does it because he's the only one who allegedly has the divine right to rule.
Right.
So this is where this is what I'm saying. The Vatican is not necessarily in control of the world, but it is a tool used by the organizations who need it to be so.
Mm-hmm.
It runs as an essential part. If you got rid of the Vatican, now that would be a different story than getting rid of Pepe Orsini, right? Now we're talking.
But
because now you've cut out one of the major control mechanisms.
Yeah, but the possibility of that happening is null to zero. I think there's always a potential. You always have to dream. You always have to hope.
Yeah. Same shit. Like, I don't think that people like you and I's podcasts and movies are going to get everyone to quit working at the World Bank, International Monetary Fund, World Economic Forum, Bank of International Settlements, Davos, Bilderberg, blah, 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 down the list of all the Swiss Templar banking. It's just not going to happen. But it's a start. Like, if you work for any of these things, if you say, what can I do right now to change the world? Well, you can quit.
Yeah.
So you're not helping them, go do something else. But this is what I'm saying. Their machine is it's very well established and lubed up. So, taking it down at this point I'm not saying it's not impossible. It might fall on its own. I think our greatest hope is that because it's not one person who runs the world as everyone thinks it is.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when it's time to say, all right, who runs the New World Order? Who is it? Which, by the way, as I said in Anarchapulco, people are like, it's the Jews. Well, the New World Order is Novo Ordo Seclorum,
which is
on your dollar bill. That's not Hebrew and Yiddish. That's Latin, which is the Roman Catholic Church priest language. If the Jews run the world, why did they declare their New World Order in Latin, the Roman Catholic Church language? and the people are like, oh, the Jesuits are Jews. No, they have a constitution where they won't let anyone fourth generation Jewish into their organization. So no. And I debunked all that, as you saw in Acapulco. I debunked all the Jewish nonsense. But our chance is that there might be some infighting now between all them saying, right, we've got the one world order. Who's in charge? And they might start infighting, to take each other out. That's very possible. They take themselves down.
I agree.
Fighting over the treasure, you know what I mean? Greed might just eat. It might be their own downfall.
I think it will be. I think with these globalist plans that they have, that they're implementing, they're falling for the biggest lies. And like with a communist regime, the people that try to bring it, that bring it into power, are the first ones to get taken out.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of these people are falling for the ultimate lie and the ultimate deception.
And yeah.
Along with us, they're going to go down too, but they don't see it like that because they're hubris. Many of them, not all, but many of them are sociopathic and psychopathic.
Yeah.
So they can't see beyond their own evil desires. And they think that they're winning, just like that cocky bully, right? That goes around picking on these little people. Oh, I'm everything. I'm the baddest around here, until he gets into a fight with somebody that can whoop his ass.
Right.
And guess what? The bully goes down. Just like with these people with their hubris. Oh, we're the biggest and baddest. Yeah, but guess what? Like every gunslinger, there's always somebody who's faster. And eventually, and I have an altruistic view, as pessimistic as my world can look like sometimes, I still have an altruistic view that eventually good's going to triumph over evil. Now, the process by which that will happen could be very devastating, very rocky, but eventually good is going to prevail. At least that's what I hope. And I just hope that through this time that we find ourselves in this current time period, where everything's falling apart, all these seemingly disconnected catastrophes and wars and financial crises that the average person, unless you have a context of history mixed with a little bit of esoteric, have a it's impossible for them to figure it out. They just are like a pinball in the bumper section of a pinball machine, and they're getting bounced around. That's all that they see, where you have to take a third party step away from it and see, oh, no, you're just a ball trapped in a pinball game. So I lost my train of thought. I had a good one going there. But I see.
I agree with you. Like, everything's balanced, and the Jesuit Swiss Templar United States, the states will go down in all this, but it always has to balance out. There's never only evil in the world, and there's never only good.
Exactly.
And it's and for the last 2,000 years, you've been under the age of Pisces, where it's been law, rule, conscious. You know, they've been able to dominate that astrological age, and they know that. Because people have taken their shit for 2,000 years, just going, okay, you're the cops, you're in charge, you're the authorities, you're the government. Mm-hmm. Now we're reaching Aquarius, where it's like, no, we don't care. You're the cops. We don't care. You're the government. We don't care. Right? For the first time, we're having a massive awakening of a lot of people, not all the people, but a lot more than ever there were. Mm-hmm. And this is where it's going to get interesting, because now people are like, yeah, you know what? Nah, no. And they aren't ready for this, you know. And as you said, they're so full of hubris. The one thing they haven't planned for is, oh shit, these people see right through us. They didn't plan for this.
They can see.
They thought they were invincible. You can see it. They're like, thought they couldn't fail. And you're like, okay. And you can see a lot of their a lot of the wheels falling off a lot of their plans. A lot are going through. They burned out 150 the top U.S. food producing plants in the last 2 years. Yeah. They've been knocking out bridges and infrastructure like we just saw happen. And the United States has to go down too. It's all balanced. They have been the Swiss Templar Jesuit head. They've been running the world for this organization for several hundred years. So they will fall, you know, but it's not like they're all going to die and there's no more United States. It will get redone in the rebalance. But some hard things are going to happen in that transition.
Right.
You know, it's not the fear. I'm not to scare people. Just have a couple months of food and water and, you know, supplies ready and stuff. Right.
I learned that lesson when COVID hit. At the time, I just sold a house and I was staying in my buddy's travel trailer till I, you know, found a place to land.
Yeah.
So I had very little food, a few days worth of food. I'd go to the grocery store on the way home from work type of thing. Yeah. And then COVID hit and I looked around and I went into the store and it was like being in Venezuela or in a grocery store in the Soviet Union. They were just raped. And I got what I could and I stored what I could, right? Which wasn't much, but it put in my brain, all right, never again. Never again am I going to get to a point where I have to worry about running out of food in 3 days. What am I going to do afterwards? And so I started not prepping. I really don't like labels because, oh, you're a prepper. So I started stocking up on food and basically made sure that I had 30 days at least worth of food. I have water filters so I can go down to the local river right here, take out buckets of water, run it through my filter, and it's potable. It's essentially just
I've
a diversion
got some too. Yeah, exactly.
Of a life straw.
We live in the day and age, man, like where, you know, even if you're broke, there's canned foods that cost fuck all. Even if you can eat SpaghettiOs for 3 months, like, yeah, go ahead. But bags of rice and beans, they cost nothing, you know. So it doesn't actually cost you that much to go stock up on a couple months of food. Mm-hmm. And then, like you said, you're not scared anymore. I've got a filter over there, too, that can do like 2,000, you know, river bales, whatever you want to call it.
Right, 2,000 gallons.
Yeah, I don't know how many 2,000, you know, passes of water through the thing. Mm-hmm. And then you're not afraid because you're like, if whatever does happen, I'm fine.
Yeah, I'm fine.
So I don't have to worry about it and all that, you know, and people are like, oh, that's just fear mongering. And you're like, yeah, no. Well, you know, when the Jesuits, Trotsky was the only Jew, by the way, when the Jesuits did the Bolshevik Revolution in Russia, they did kill 60 million people and the Russians killed 6 million Ukrainians and starved them to death. So to think, oh, you're fear-mongering, we'll go back and tell those people that was just fear-mongering.
Go back to the Irish during the potato famine.
Potatoes. The English just took, again, the church took their potatoes.
Took their
it's
potatoes.
It's not there weren't any potatoes. They took them off them so they couldn't eat them.
They intentionally starved them out, which is a
they
way.
They starved them, yeah.
Well, even Kissinger said something about using food as a weapon. And when you think about it,
food controls the population, because when you're hungry, you're looking for survival and existence. You're not going to overthrow the regime while you can't feed your family that night.
Right.
They divert your attention to collecting food for the day.
It goes back to Hilo's hierarchy of needs.
Right. Yeah. You're going to always food and water first. Right. And if you don't have any, then you're not out sword fighting with the government.
Or sitting around having deep conversations like we do. You know,
right? Yeah, because if we were both starving right now, we wouldn't be doing this. I'd be like, "What are you up to, Dave?" You're like, "I'm going to look for some freaking canned food to try to eat."
And I'm going down to the river and trying to get me some clams, a couple fishes, and maybe a few worms that I could eat, and give me some of those wild grapes. You know?
Yeah.
Well,
in the end, we are gonna. In the end, they never win.
No, they don't.
But To be silly enough to think there's not going to be some really horrific stuff as that rebalance happens, because we are in they have been up here and there is a rebalancing coming.
Right.
But to think that that's just going to be smooth as, you know, cotton candy, you're kidding yourself. Just get a few months where, just in case, wherever you are, even if you're in the cities and stuff, like, just it's canned food and rice and beans. It's cheap. Just be prepared and that's it. And then you don't have any fear.
Right. Well, it goes time immemorial. Look at our grandparents. They always had stock rooms. They always had canned foods.
Yeah.
Oh, hold on for a second. Oh, darn phone. Forgot to put it on silent.
All right.
and if anything, you know, take the, what we talk about, the world powers, conspiratorial thinking, if you will. I really don't like that term, but I think it describes it. For basic emergencies.
Right.
You have a storm that comes through that knocks out services. The services are going to be down.
You just buy a bunch of candles, you know, like they've been telling you, Cyber Polygon, and they're taking down the grid and the electric grid. Well, if you know their plan is to take out the electric grid for a few months to screw with everyone, just get a bunch of candles and make sure you have a generator. And then you're like, okay, if they took out the power, nobody had power in 1850.
They still survived.
if the grid went down in 1850, they'd be like, oh, it's Tuesday.
Another thing to do is learn basic camping skills. Like, how do you build a good fire pit? There's multiple ways of doing it. It's not just putting rocks around it. You know, you dig a hole, you have an air intake, and you can essentially make a rocket stove in the ground. So therefore,
rocket stoves. Yeah. Learn how to build one. Go online. It's so easy.
And they're very efficient. They don't take much to run as far as wood goes, and they generate a lot of BTUs or heat out of it. Learn simple things like that. That can get you through that short-term period, because the people that are really going to fall are the ones that only have 3 days worth of food, like I used to have, that don't have a way to filter their water. So all of a sudden their tap turns on and it doesn't work. There's no bottled water down there at the store. What are they going to do? They're going to panic. They're going to freak out, and eventually they're going to die. Where if you're
or take yours, they're going to come after you. Yeah, exactly. You know, so you're not talking. I'm not talking about prepping for the nuclear winter. I'm talking about a couple months,
right?
Not a year or 2 years. It'll always be a few months, whatever happens. And at that point, when people's backs are up against the wall, if they have to fight, then they'll fight.
Yeah,
and that'll be the end of all this nonsense. You know, when how many people are in the U.S.? 300 million or 270? I don't know how many, but. If they have to, that'll be the end of the government.
And we have a lot of guns.
It's 270 million against 60,000. See you later.
Game well, it's over. Like what the famous quote from the Japanese general about in World War II, why they didn't attack America, because there'd be a gun behind every blade of grass.
Exactly. There are. They got flamethrowers. They got all kinds of shit. Yeah.
Right.
You know, and I don't think it will come to that. Like, it's not going to get apocalyptic. I don't think... but, you know, it 3 months isn't apocalyptic, but it's enough to, like you said, the unprepared people are going to panic, and they're the danger. They're even more dangerous than the government, is people who are panicking because they don't have any food and water. That's who's dangerous to you, not the government's dangerous, but they're more dangerous to you.
Pass the Bible and the ammunition, son, while you're at it. Grab those potatoes and turn them my way. Because, you know, always have the gun behind the door.
Mm-hmm.
Type of mentality.
I saw some funny meme where, like, the woman's like, I'm growing all the food and shit for the apocalypse. What are you doing? And the guy said, I'm collecting guns. And she said, what are you going to eat? And he said, you're growing it for me.
Yeah, exactly. I'm eating your food.
That's why I got the guns.
Steve, I can't believe it. We're running up on almost an hour and a half.
Yeah, right, I've got to actually shoot off too, man. I've got a gig. But yeah, and I don't want to leave this on a downer like that. Like, I'm not saying, you know, scare yourself to death. I'm saying it will cost you literally $100 to get 3 months worth of beans, rice, and canned food.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll probably do it cheaper than that.
Even if you're eating SpaghettiOs, you're still alive and you're one step ahead of all the normies who didn't stock up.
Yeah, you're not going to die. Yeah, you can live on SpaghettiOs for 3 months. It's not going to kill you.
Yeah, my gut will be roached out. I'd be having constant diarrhea. But guess what? I'm still alive to have constant diarrhea.
I give you the shits, though.
Oh, yeah. Oh, God. When I was a kid, I loved him. As an adult, I'm like, those are the most disgusting pieces of shit, chemical-filled food you could ever eat. But tell you what,
my dad said they gave him the they used to give him that in Vietnam. They called it SOS, shit on a shingle.
I remember that. Hey, I'm here to tell you, my mom made shit on shingle, and she could make it to where it was good. I've had other people make it, and I'm like, yeah, this is shit on a shingle. Mom's SOS. I wish I could make it like she did, but unfortunately, she's with angels right now, so she ain't hanging out with us. So she's got one step ahead of us, you know. So. Before we get out of here, why don't you, as the wise man with a golden voice, tell everybody where you can be found, sir?
If you want to write to me, I'm spacebusters@hotmail.com. We have a channel called Spacebusters. There's another one, which I'm convinced someone else made just so we don't get distracted from. But our logo is an astronaut with a Ghostbusters, like red, you know, circle around it. And we're Spacebusters on YouTube, which I don't post a lot on there because usually they're banned from there. BitChute, Odyssey. I think we're on Rumble. I think it automatically uploads some of our videos. And then we're also on Vigilante.tv.
Okay.
So our main channels are really BitChute, Odyssey, Spacebusters. There is a YouTube channel. And then Vigilante.tv, which is Jeff Berwick's channel. So that's pretty much it. And I'm more of a filmmaker. I don't do podcasts. Sometimes I interview some people, but I'm a guest on a lot of these kind of things. Thank you for having me on. That was actually great.
Well, thanks for coming on. I've been looking forward to talking to you since we left Narcopoco.
And we'll do it again. And if you want to get deeper into if you're interested in the Irish thing, I'm putting together a film right now and part two of a presentation. So I'd like to be able to sit down and not go into all the Jews and all that, because I've done that. If people want to see that, they can go to Alpha Vedic. I did a 2-hour one with Mike Winter and Bear Lando about a month ago. But I'm going to put together a full thing on all the ancient Irish thing if people are into the hidden history and stuff.
So where can your films be found? Are they Spacebusters or are they?
They're on those channels I mentioned. Yeah, that's where all my films are at. Yeah, on all those channels.
And I'm definitely going to have to go back and review them. I love documentaries, by the way.
Yeah,
the old grainy ones.
That's my main thing. Yep. All right, brother. I got to shove off too as well, but we'll do this again for sure.
Okay, cool. Hold on. I'm just going to end this really quick here, if you don't mind. I do want to ask you something really quick off the air here.
Yeah, no worries.
No, everybody, go out there. Go to spacebusters.com, support Steve Faulkner, leave him a comment, send him an email, whether you agree or disagree, like I say, send me a comment. Hate listeners are welcome. Just spell my name right. That's all I care about. My show can be found on Rumble. That's Naughty by Nature with Nature Boy. Naughty is spelled N-A-U-T-I, as in nautical, which is a little bit apropos to what we were talking about. I can be found on all major podcast providers, Apple, Stitcher, TuneIn, whichever one is your podcast du jour. And I'm really kind of promoting my audio podcast for a few reasons. One, it's free. You get a better quality audio. Two, and also, it's very hard to cancel. If they cancel me everywhere, I can set up my own server and I can set up my own RSS feed. So go out there, subscribe to my podcast, follow me on Rumble. My audio podcast can also be found every Tuesday from 3 to 5 p.m. on Free World FM. And every Saturday, we have the Encore presentation at 11 p.m. Eastern time. I always get my times mixed up. 11 p.m. Eastern on the TNP New Prisoners Rumble channel. So I want to thank all of you for tuning in. You have a lot of podcasts to listen too. So I really appreciate anybody that's listening. I appreciate the comments. I appreciate the support. Y'all rock out there. So as I like to say, have a good day. Have a good evening, depending on where you're listening to the show. And we'll see you later.